Are you ready? Are you ready to take massive action towards building a life and lifestyle that rewards you with a fit body, endless supplies of mental and physical energy, and total freedom from guilt around food and exercise? This is Cut the Fat Podcast. Right. Hello, everybody. Hey, Blythe.
Hey, Ray. How are you doing?
Awesome, as always. And we're bringing another podcast episode.
We are. We are back on the podcast bandwagon. And I am so excited to be bringing some more new, fresh information to our listeners. It's something that you and I both enjoy doing. So I'm glad we've been able to take the time to do this and provide new information for our listeners.
And in the last episode, we talked about how stress can make you fat.
That was a jam-packed episode. If you guys haven't listened to episode 78, that's definitely one you want to have a listen to.
Absolutely. And at the end of that podcast, I alluded to the fact that this week we're going to be talking about some research. And that research article is actually entitled Prescribed Breaks as a Means to Disrupt Weight Control Efforts. It was published in Obesity Research in February 2003. But I wandered upon it and thought it was such a very interesting topic. And the reason it's so interesting is because the researchers set out to prove one thing and they ended up proving another. And I'm not sure that they actually made the connection as to the significance of what they proved. So we're going to talk about that study in today's episode. And I think you're going to be kind of blown away by what they discovered.
Awesome.
You know, it reminds me of a conversation that I had, and I've alluded to this in I think past episodes, or it might have been on our email system, but I was having a conversation with another weight loss expert by the name of Stephen Cabral one day, and he and I were talking. I said, you know, what do you do with people who seem to be stuck in a plateau, who seem to be doing everything right? You know, they're not eating a lot of, they're not eating in excess of calories, they're exercising on a regular basis. They seem to be doing a lot of things right, but their weight is stagnant. And he said this. He said, what I do is I tell them to stop everything. And it kind of took me aback because, you know, I'd seen this phenomenon from time to time. And, you know, we hear about this in the personal training world when, you know, a client, you know, decides to go out and eat a whole pizza one day and they wake up the next morning and for some reason they lost 2 pounds. They didn't gain 2 pounds. Right. And I'm not saying that happens all the time. And I'm not saying that that 2 pounds was fat, but something shifts within the body when we take breaks. And sometimes it's for the good, sometimes it's for the stagnant, and sometimes it's for the worse.
Right.
But what this study wanted to do was the researchers were evaluating. They looked at all of the research and they said, you know what? Across all of the data, there seems to be this 6 month stick point, right? Mm-hmm. And the problem with a lot of research is that most weight loss research studies don't go 6 months. And most people at the end of the study, you know, they don't regain lost weight for about 6 months. So the studies don't go long enough to evaluate whether or not there is long-term benefit to whatever they're studying. So if they're doing a low-carb study and it goes 4 weeks, for example, and they show that somebody lost 15 pounds, well, you know, and even if they take it another month after the study ends and look at the weight loss, most people don't regain that weight for about 6 months. So what they wanted to do in the study was they wanted to figure out a way where they could artificially throw in lapses, right? They wanted to say, okay, well, why don't we experimentally have people go off of their diet at various points and see what kind of and see how much weight they regain, how much weight relapses or comes back on the body. And that way we could set up a kind of a approach to studying diets even when people have these lapses. And that's what they were trying to prove, okay, that they could artificially have people go off the diet and see that relapse happen faster, right?
Okay, so just on the nutritional side, we're not talking about exercise. There was exercise in this as well.
We'll kind of get to the – there were three groups in this study. Let's go ahead and jump in. Sure. I want to try to – what when you're talking about research – things can get fairly dry fairly quickly. So I want to – if you hear me getting really dry, Blythe, you've got to give me a virtual slap across the face so
I will
liven things back up. But so here's how it was set up. There were three groups. The control group was put on 14 weekly sessions of a behavioral weight loss program. Okay. So every week they came in and they had a weigh-in. They had a discussion topic. And then they had some discussion time, and then they had a lesson focused on diet, exercise, or behavioral strategies. Okay.
Okay.
So that was the control group.
Okay.
And at the end of their 14 weeks of lessons, there was 6 weeks where they they basically let them go and do their own thing. And
you mean like
then they
exercise,
reassessed
like everything.
Right. So, after the 14 weeks, there were 6 weeks before they had people come back to reassess changes, right?
Okay,
because
so
the whole study is a 20-week study, okay?
Okay.
So they had another group that was labeled the long break group. Now, in this group, they had 7 weeks of lessons. Then they took off for 6 weeks. And I'll explain what happened during those 6 weeks where they were told to take off of the program. Then they had another 7 weeks of lessons, one each week. And then a week after the end of the study, they did their final assessment, okay?
Okay. Mm-hmm.
And then they had a short break group. Now, the short break group went in for 3 weekly lessons. So one lesson a week for 3 weeks. They took 2 weeks off, another 3 weekly lessons, 2 weeks off, 3 weekly lessons, 2 weeks off.
Okay.
And then they had 5 weekly lessons, a final 2 weeks off, and then they had their post-treatment evaluation at 20 weeks. Okay, so we have three groups. Control group, 14 straight weeks. Long break group, who had 6 week break in between 7 weekly lessons. And then they had the short break group, which had 3 weeks.
3 weeks on and then
2 weeks
off.
3 weeks on, 2 weeks off, 3 weeks on, 2 weeks off, 5 weeks on, 2 weeks off. Okay?
Okay.
So that's the most dry part of the study. So all groups ended up getting 14 weeks of training, right? They were just in various, stints, right? Each group was put on between 1,000 and a 1,500 calorie diet, depending upon the weight that they needed to lose. Okay. And they were given a list of 13 high-fat foods to restrict entirely. So these were things like cheese, burgers, cakes, pastries, etc. So they were given 13 high-fat foods that were very, very commonly consumed. And they were just said, don't eat any of these, okay?
Right. Do not eat list, okay?
Right. And then they would come in during their trainings or during their weekly lessons, and they would have their weigh-in, their discussion, and their lesson, okay?
Okay. Mm-hmm.
Exercise was gradually increased to 150 minutes per week of activity. So, during their training sessions, they were told, okay, let's increase throughout the 14 weeks to about 150 minutes per week of activity. They were also instructed to record their diet, their exercise all weeks that they were, quote-unquote, on the program, and they were told to weigh themselves daily as long as they were, quote-unquote, on the program, okay?
Okay. Mm-hmm.
The long break group and the short break group, they were told that breaks were designed to give them an opportunity to experience a lapse and to learn how to recover from that lapse. So that's the story that they're being told, that they were putting these breaks in so that they can experience what a lapse would feel like and then learn how to recover from that lapse.
Okay, so it's a lesson and it's a strategy.
Right.
Okay.
And no group meetings were held during the breaks. They were instructed not to monitor their weight or behaviors during the break.
Okay.
They were instructed to eat and exercise as they had before they started the program. Okay.
But on their own and without the tracking the food.
Right. So they were supposed to go back to just their old way of living.
Oh, okay.
Okay.
Gotcha.
Uh-huh. So they were told not to eat and exercise as they were taught, basically.
Gotcha.
Just go back to the old way.
Okay.
After the breaks ended, the meetings and the lessons continued where they left off. So they just continued the program as though there were no break in between, right?
Okay.
Mm-hmm. They received no help with the recovery. besides this, a single lesson on relapse prevention that was given to all the study participants, including the group, the control group.
Okay.
Okay, so that's the whole study, and it's important to understand. So as we get into the results of this study, you can kind of grasp what all this means, okay?
Okay, cool. I love this because I have a theory on this that we can talk about after, and I have practiced this with some of my clients, and I'm curious to see how this all turns out. I'm glad I don't know the answer to the research because I'm finding out with our listeners, and I think there's so much valuable information that's about to come out of nowhere.
And I agree with you. I was pretty surprised by the findings as well. Okay, so far, not so bad?
No, not at all. Okay, keep good. Going.
Okay, so here, let's get into the results. So the breaks were associated with weight stagnation or small relapses in their weight, okay? So okay. That's not unexpected, right? They're going off the program, and so we would expect the weight to either stagnate or even for some weight to come back on. Mm-hmm. But there was really no statistical significance between the groups in that.
So not even for the short break and the long break.
Not even for the control group.
Okay.
As we'll get into. Cool. So there was a little bit of weight stagnation and small relapses. We expected that, but not a big deal, right? Overall weight loss during the 20-week studies were very, very similar. Here's how similar. During the course of the 20 weeks, 8.2 kilograms was lost in the control group. Not so bad.
It's 16, 17 pounds.
Yep. Mm-hmm. 7 kilograms were lost in the long break group.
Okay.
And 8.2 kilograms were lost in the short break group.
Okay.
So during the 20-week study.
Not a big variation between the three.
Right. Exactly. And you got to keep in mind that they're taking – I mean, the short break group took 2 weeks off every 3 weeks.
Right.
You know?
Right.
At 11 months – so they followed these people for about a year, okay, to find out. So after the end of the study – it was 11-month follow-up, and what they found was that all the results, as far as relapses were concerned, were about the same. 7.3 kilograms in the control group was is how much weight they maintained, right? So how much weight loss they maintained. 7.3 kilograms in the control group, 6.5 kilograms in the long break group, 8.4 kilograms in the short break group.
Wow, okay.
So no statistical significance. Even though the long break group sounds like it gained a little bit more weight, it's not statistically significant, meaning we can't rule out just plain old chance as the cause of that. Okay?
Okay, yep.
The data did indicate that the break groups did, in fact, take a break from the program, as they indicated, by fewer weigh-ins. They took fewer weigh-ins when they were on their break. They actually increased their consumption of the restricted foods during their break, and weight stagnation and mild regain indicated that, in fact, they took the break. Now, that's important because what if they said, okay, we want you to stop weighing in and go back to the old way of eating, and they didn't, and they just continued the way that they were taught, then it would kind of negate the findings of this research. But the researchers were pretty satisfied with the fact that all these things were true, that when they asked them after they came back from their break, did you weigh yourself? Most of the time they said no. Did you restrict these foods? They probably did restrict some of the foods, but it wasn't a whole lot. They still noticed that more of these foods were being consumed during the break point.
Okay.
And interestingly, and this is a pretty fascinating finding, both of the break groups maintained their exercise schedule during breaks despite being given the green light to not exercise, to go back to the old way of doing it. So during the course of the study, without really thinking about it, without consciously trying to get to the gym, all the groups maintained their exercise program, including the break groups.
Interesting. Okay, so that was a choice.
That was a choice. And it was an easy choice because basically what they were trying to get people to do is not think too much about their lifestyle as they did before the study. And it didn't take much for them to maintain that. So that's important. We'll get back to that when we get into the discussion as to what all this means, right?
Okay, cool. Yes.
All right, so key findings.
I might be a total nerd, but I love this stuff.
Hopefully others who are listening are also nerds, because I can see how some of this stuff could get a little bit dry. But all right, let's get into some of the key findings. And then, you know, this is kind of where we'll get into the discussion of things. So taking multiple 2-week breaks or one long 6-week break did not affect the weight loss over a 20-week plan. There was no statistically significant difference between the groups. Right. Number two, weight stagnation or mild regain did occur during the breaks, but it did not negatively impact the results at the 20-week mark. The body just seemed to increase the weight loss rate once the programs were restarted to account for any gain or stagnation that occurred during that time period. That's important. It's very important because in our listeners' minds and in our clients' minds, when they have this lapse in judgment, it negates all of the benefits associated with their, with their diet and lifestyle.
Right, the plan. Mm-hmm.
And what this is saying is that as long as you maintain the long-term plan, it all levels out in the end. The body kicks up metabolism after you restart your program, and so you regain those losses, within the weeks that follow the lapse. Right.
Okay. So the consistency.
It comes back to the consistency, and this study just proves that, in fact, that advice is as solid as it comes.
Okay.
And then number three, during the 6-week break, the long break group didn't lose weight. But what was interesting was that neither did the control group.
Mm-hmm.
So at that 6-week break mark, right, you would expect that the control group would just continue to lose weight slowly and steady.
They're pounding away at, chipping away at it.
Right. But what was interesting was that 6-week mark, there was stagnation no matter which group you were in. In fact, the majority of the weight loss occurred in those first 6 weeks of the control group's program for the entire 20 weeks, indicating that there's some natural resistance at 6 weeks. And we do see that seem to occur in the research literature as well.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Mm-hmm. Number four, the participants easily and quickly returned to the program after the breaks. It didn't appear to be a problem. This was kind of a surprise to the researchers because – you hear it a lot, right? You hear a lot of people say that, oh, I fell off the wagon. I just couldn't get back on.
Right. That's exactly what I was going to say. It's so hard to just get back on the wagon.
But in fact,
it's interesting.
It's not hard. And this study proves, and I'll explain to you why it's not hard for these people to get back on the program. They didn't complain about it. They just, bam, hopped back on it. And I'll explain why that happened, what the psychological phenomena is that's going on that allowed them to jump back on the program without any resistance, okay?
Okay, yes.
People seemed to enjoy the exercise component, and they didn't abandon it during the breaks. Again, this was a surprise to the researchers because they were basically said, you have permission to not exercise.
So, and it is surprising to hear that most people didn't take them up on that offer. It's something that they chose and wanted to do as opposed to something that they had signed up for and made themselves do.
Right. And a lot of this, as you'll see, comes back to our perception of things.
Mm-hmm.
And I just want to point out, and we'll probably, when we get to the final takeaways of this show, I think we'll kind of recircle back to this, but exercise in all of the research doesn't appear to really make a huge dent in weight lost during the study, but it does act as a vaccine to weight regain. So you've got to keep that in mind, that your exercise program, even though, if you were to hop on a diet and or do a diet plus exercise routine, you'll probably lose about the same amount of weight. Now, if you're doing it as resistance training, that weight will come primarily from fat and you will maintain your muscle mass.
Right.
But in general, with aerobic exercise and things like that, it's more of a vaccine for weight regain more than it is about helping you lose weight.
Okay.
All right. So let's do discussion.
That's a golden nugget, people.
Let's do the discussion. Okay. All right. So why didn't they regain the weight? All right. Let's first kind of go back to this, the reason why it's so easy for people to jump back on the program.
Let's touch on that.
Marlott and Gordon, in their book, Behavioral Medicine, Changing Health Lifestyles. This is not a book for the general public. It's something that was referenced by the researchers. The author suggests that it's your perception or belief about what a lapse means that determines whether it leads to a relapse.
Okay.
So a lapse is a momentary digression from the program, right? It's like being on a diet for 6 weeks and then eating a whole pizza one day, waking up in a daze with crumbs falling from your mouth. And a relapse is really a global return to the old way of you, right? It's giving up on the diet. That's what the relapse is. So in the average person, a lapse is what is blamed for the relapse. True?
Okay. So yes, so it takes them down that road and then they can't recover themselves.
Right. Do you find that this is in fact the case with your clients like, who come
Absolutely.
In?
Yeah. Absolutely.
When they don't have somebody there watching, like if they don't have you, the biggest fear that people have is I'm going to have a bad day and I'm going to give up on the program.
Right. But I try to work on that with my clients. Right, but yes.
That's because you're there.
Absolutely.
Right. So in this study, lapses were planned and in fact, they were mandated. Mm. Thus, they did not lead to that classic self-blame and negative reaction that most people have when they quote unquote fall off the wagon.
So what you're saying is because it was part of the instruction, it was viewed as a pause rather than an end.
Right. There was no emotion behind the lapse.
Okay.
Right?
Interesting.
That's
yes.
That's the key factor. So a lot of you guys who are listening right now, when you think of those points where you said, oh man, I had a bad weekend, right? Mm-hmm. And that led to you going off and search for the next best diet. Mm-hmm. Well, the reason that lapse led to relapse is simply because you think that lapse wipes away all of the benefit that you've done. Even if you lost 3 pounds last week and you have a bad weekend and you wake up Monday 3 pounds heavier, mm-hmm. This study is saying it doesn't wipe away all of the benefits as long as you continue along the plan, you know, when you realize that you've made this lapse.
Right. So push play again.
Push
play. Continue from the pause.
Exactly.
Push play again.
Uh-huh. Exactly. Okay. Exactly. Continue from the pause. I love that. Continue from the pause. Press play again. Gold nugget. Write it down.
Yeah. Okay.
Okay. In numerous studies, exercise seemed to prevent weight regain. We talked about that. And that's even if the study failed to show any weight loss during the course of the study. So I guess the bottom line here is that it doesn't matter how slow you go, so long as you don't stop, right?
Right.
It almost always comes back to that, doesn't it?
Yes. And, you know, the old saying goes, and I say it probably every single podcast, that consistency is key. And everybody will experience their journey at a different pace. And, you know, you might get leaner 1 week and then you're stagnant for a couple of weeks. Some people might get lean for 3 weeks and then be stagnant for 3 more weeks or 6 weeks. Everybody moves at a different pace. And as long as you are consistent with what you are doing and sticking to it, and I know we've said that before too, you know, selecting something and sticking with it, whether it be like the control group with 14 weeks of sessions, you know, straight across the board, or the long break group, you know, whichever group you are in, whichever one suits your lifestyle the best, as long as you adhere to that, it's going to work.
I wonder, you know, and this hasn't really been evaluated or studied, but I wonder if, let's say you say to yourself, okay, I'm going to do personal training, right? Mm-hmm. And I'm going to sign up for 6 weeks of personal training because that's all I can afford.
Okay.
If it would be better for them to sign up for those 6 weeks, but spread them over, let's say they do 2 weeks on, 2 week break, but during that break you try to maintain your lifestyle. Mm-hmm. And you do 2 weeks on, and then you 2 weeks break. So according to this study, it seems like it would be better spent if you were to put in those breaks from the personal training per se, and not go off the program. Try to maintain it during that 2 week break.
Interesting,
but
you know
you get that prolonged benefit because you're already paid up for those 6 weeks. So you're on the full, you know, what is it, 18 weeks? Is that
– yeah.
Math that up?
No, that would be – well, yeah, it'd be 18.
12 weeks, I guess.
Yeah, okay. Yeah. We'd have to times it by 2.
Okay.
Yeah. Oh, my gosh. Wow. This good thing this isn't a podcast about math.
amen to that. That's right.
You know, that's even interesting with nutritional – from the nutritional aspect because I usually work with people for 30 days, 4 weeks at a time. Usually, you know, it's just the 30-day mark to develop some new habits and kind of create a new habit basically for people, a new routine for them to get into. And just like our 30-day walk plan – you know, we prescribe that you start by walking for 30 days. It could be the same thing. And now I'm not saying skip a day of walking in between, but I'm saying even for the nutritional aspect of mm-hmm. learning something, you could do 2 weeks on and 2 weeks off, and then revisit it in 2 weeks. And, you know, so actually it would be over the span of 2 months, but you would only be, you know, signed up for a month of nutritional assistance. I think that would be a great way to help educate people to do it on their own in the short term.
Or, you know, you could even experiment. Maybe you do this with some of your clients and say, okay, let's go 30 days. We'll meet once a week, and then I'm going to have you take 2 weeks off to implement and see where the resistance comes. Come back, and we'll do another, you know, another 4 weeks, and then we'll do another 2 week break and let you kind of go out and implement and see what kind of resistance occurs. And we'll, and just repeating that process, and then you could expand it to 4 weeks on, 4 weeks off, 4 weeks on, 4 weeks off.
Absolutely, I think that's a great idea.
Yeah, interesting. Okay, well, let's continue. So let's kind of get into the motivation moment, right? With the motivation moment, I like to kind of bring up a saying or a phrase that I found that I feel is motivational, but also instructional, right? And so I post a lot of these on our Instagram and Twitter, and you know, you post up some of these things on Facebook as well. So here's today's motivation moment. It really ties in well to our discussion, and that is: what gets measured gets done. What gets rewarded gets done well. Okay, so let's break that up. Let's break that up. So, what gets measured gets done. So,
let's say making a list. Right, you're measuring what you have to do for the day, making a list, and you check it off as you go.
Right, and everybody has done this where they, and it's not that they, not everybody has continued to do this, but when you do a to-do list, for example, practically everybody finds that they get a lot more done when they have that list in front of them.
Right.
Now, you know, what I found is that if you, that you aren't really serious about body change until you start measuring results.
Of course.
Yeah, I mean, you say, of course, but a lot of people don't quite get that. They say, oh, I'm going on a diet, but they haven't really started measuring anything. Mm-hmm. How do you do that?
I have clients who are resistant to being weighed the first time we meet, or resistant to checking their body fat levels. And I'm like, this holds both of us accountable. You know, if your body fat's not dropping by, you know, the next 2 weeks or the end of the month, then we're going to have to make some adjustments. And I find that it kind of locks people into not just the accountability, but the idea that they're really going to do this, that they're really invested.
Right. And so just saying to them, what gets measured gets done is a key factor. You know, a program is dying when you're working with a client. You know, a program is dying within their head when that client reports that they haven't been measuring their results, or they stopped measuring their results.
Right.
The moment that happens, you already know that the program is in need of some life support.
Right.
And so, you know, we also know that measurement is closely tied to rewards. So that brings us to the second part of today's motivation moment, and that is: what gets rewarded gets done well. So even though what gets measured gets done, what gets rewarded gets done well. In this study, researchers report that the maximal weight loss is typically achieved after about 6 months. And the consistency of which the six-month plateau occurs within the research literature, not in this study, but in all of the other studies that they've looked at, they said, and I quote, it's striking. Like, it's like it occurs in almost all the participants in practically all the behavioral weight loss studies out there and across various weight loss methods as well, including very low-calorie diets and even in drug trials, in drugs that are designed to, you know, help people lose weight. They still see after 6 months, if they're taking their drug consistently, there's still that six-month plateau that occurs.
Interesting.
So, you know, what we know is that once rewards stop occurring, the body is conditioned to stop taking action. Can you comment on that a little bit?
Actually, yes. And I, you know, I just made a link in my head when you were saying that, is that some of the research that you read today between the long break group and the short break group, although neither one of those show much difference from the control group, but I see the weeks that they had off as a reward, maybe not a reward, but like a mental break. But I can see how you would feel like if you made it successfully through the first 7 weeks, if you were in the long break group, that you have a 6 week break and you're almost rewarding how good you feel and rewarding your body with the exercise. So you have a perspective change. because you were taught those lessons in the beginning of the program. So I think reward comes in many different mm-hmm. It shows its head in many different ways, you know, whether it be your body fat goes down or the scale goes down or your energy levels increase, or you find maybe you can have dessert twice a week without, you know, completely falling off the wagon or without gaining any weight. You know, you've reached a point where you're just on it, you know, and I think that is a reward in itself. I think a lot of times people try to come up with a reward for themselves and quite often resort to food being a reward.
Right.
Yes. And unfortunately, that kind of reinforces a bad habit.
Right. Like if I lose 10 pounds, I'll get myself a banana split.
Right.
So, you know, with weight loss, you may not know that things are changing unless you are measuring the right variables. Just like you just said, you know, weight can be one such variable that you measure, but it's not enough. And
right.
I know that you all know that weight alone is not enough. But we oftentimes need to remind you, because most people I meet are not taking measurements, they're not doing body fat percentages, and they're not evaluating other aspects of their life, their energy levels, how well they're sleeping, how confident they feel, how well the clothes are fitting, and things like that.
Right. You just mentioned so many more. It's all the ones that I was thinking of but couldn't get out.
Yeah.
But yeah. Just, you know, the confidence. We touched on that the last podcast, and that speaks in volumes.
And, you know, measurement's only 50%. The reward is the other 50%.
Yes.
And I think people have to remember that it's not enough to measure. You have to be getting the rewards. Or as we mentioned, once the rewards stop occurring, the body's conditioned to just stop taking action, to stop doing the things that you're doing. That's not the right approach. And this research supports that idea that when the plateau happens, you've got to continue through. In the psychology of weight loss, we talk a lot about what's called the Valley of Despair. And the Valley of Despair is like this necessary stop on the way to success. It's like the pit. It's like you've changed everything. You're eating perfectly. You're exercising daily. And then the Valley of Despair is that moment when you've done that for a couple of weeks and seen no change on the scale.
Right.
And most people get off at that stop. And what we need to do is to realize that the Valley of Despair is a necessary and essential a condition of long-term success. We all go through it. You are not going to be that lucky one who was blessed with a metabolism that rewards you with weight loss day in and day out, week in and week out, month in and month out, year in and year out, as long as you maintain a quote-unquote healthy lifestyle.
That's correct. And ding, 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 big golden nugget right there. So rewind and re-listen to that again if you missed it. I reside in the Valley of Despair. I see people in the Valley of Despair every day, and I appreciate when they reach out to me because I teach them that. And I think that it is so imperative for the people out there that are struggling, the people that are listening to this podcast who have yet to struggle, the people who've been struggling for years. It's so important for them to understand that this is necessary and quite often just takes a little bit of perspective change. And if you keep doing the same thing, expecting different results, it's time to change it up a little bit.
Absolutely. And keep in mind that you can measure two types of changes within the body. You can measure changes in the body itself and changes in your actions. So the more you measure actions rather than body changes, the more potential rewards you will feel. So if you decide to sign up for martial arts, for example, you measure your progress in classes, in belts, in stripes that you get on your belt, and in skill level. Like, you start to feel more competent with the things that they're teaching you. Mm-hmm. Rewards are bountiful in that situation and unrelated to weight. So if you were to sign up for a martial art, for example, and start to see that type of reward coming to you for your action of going to class, that's where you get bountiful rewards that are not tied to your weight. Even
right.
if you didn't lose weight for 3 weeks, you know, while you're going to your martial arts classes, you enjoy it and you see progress because you're getting stripes and belts and skills. So
absolutely.
Think of it in that term as well, is that the more you measure your actions, it doesn't mean don't measure your body. It just means also measure your actions and use that as a reward when the body isn't giving you the rewards.
Right. And it's really common for people to just hone in and really focus on just changes in weight or just changes in the body or you know, fitting into a certain pair of pants. And we forget to see all of the reasons why we should be rewarding ourselves for, you know, all the good choices you made this week, things like that. And find ways to reward yourself. If you, you know, decide that you're going to stick to whole food for 7 days straight, and that's a goal that you've made for yourself. If you do that, even if it's 75%, you need to reward yourself. And now, not necessarily with food, but maybe you could go get a pedicure or, you know, find a way, drive yourself to a new park in town and go for a walk, you know, reward yourself in ways that you never thought of before. Being creative.
And the more you disassociate from weight as a key measure, not as a measure, but as a key measure mm-hmm. of fitness and health, then the more success you'll have in the long term. So
absolutely.
Just remember that. So let me just kind of toss out the final key takeaways. And I'm sorry if this is repetitive, but I do want you guys to not forget some of these key points. So the first takeaway is how you perceive lapses, i.e. falling off of the wagon, mm-hmm. will determine whether a lapse results in relapse. The research should some of the takeaways you should take away from the research is that falling back into your old ways doesn't occur after a lapse. It occurs right. after you decide that lapse means that you're back in your old ways.
Right. You've decided upon the finality of that.
Right. And so in this study, 2 week lapses and even 6 week lapses didn't change the results 20 weeks later. So you should be changing the way that you view it. Think in terms of flexible lifestyle. Sometimes life gets in the way. That's just what happens. Viewing those temporary setbacks as non-lifestyle threatening. See what I did there? That's allows you to jump right back into the plan without feeling like all is lost. Can you kind right. of just
so if you push the pause button, just hit play again.
There you go. Love that. I love that play.
Easy.
If you do nothing else but exercise, that exercise will help you to at least hold the ground while you step back into your healthy eating pattern. So when you lapse, sometimes it takes you a little while to mentally be ready to jump back in the program. That's okay. You know, I mean, like I said, 2-6 weeks didn't seem to matter as long as you continue the program. But you know, maintain your exercise or just your activity. Even if it's just the daily walk, maintain that because that does seem to help you hold the ground.
Yeah. Good piece of advice.
And the purpose of this discussion, by the way, and this is kind of my second to last final point, but the purpose of this discussion is not to give you permission to take 2 weeks off. Although sometimes that is warranted. Sometimes, you know, especially if weight stagnates for a while, it may be about taking 2 weeks off to let mm-hmm. your body kind of recover metabolically.
Yeah.
It's just, you know, primarily to let you know that if you stay active and jump back on the program when you feel ready, then those breaks become synergistic with your lifestyle yes. rather than the opposite of your lifestyle, right?
You can still make headway. Absolutely. So all of the marbles you're putting into the jar, every day of exercise, you're putting a marble in that jar. And just because you may be you may have hit pause on the nutritional side of it and you're taking a little break, you're still adding marbles to that jar. And that jar will still get full as long as you continue to pound away at it.
That's very well said. And my final point on the key takeaways is that, and it kind of is another motivation moment, if you will, and that is that failure is a verb, not a noun.
Ah, I love that one.
Failure is a verb, not a noun. Remember that. Tell yourself that. You're not a failure when you fall off the wagon. It's just a moment where things didn't go your way, and just hit the play button, man. Hit the play button.
It's that simple. Seriously, we do it every day.
We should make a weight loss product that promises lasting long-term weight loss forever. And when they open, then we'll charge $100 for it. And when they get it, it'll have one line in it. Press the play button. Yeah, press play. That's it. Maybe, two words.
Maybe
press
one play. Day we'll have another volume of podcasts and we could just call it Press Play.
Press Play.
And all of our old school listeners from 2016 or whatever will be able to reflect back on the good old days.
Absolutely. And
speaking of flashbacks,
yeah,
are we going to visit a flashback today on one of our old podcasts?
Let's do it. We only have a few more moments, but let's jump into it. What is our flashback moment for the week, Blythe?
Our flashback moment for the week goes back to 2010, and you and I are talking about how we were 35 years old and how getting older was, you know, inevitable. And we were actually doing a radio show. I think it was episode 24, and we talk about the six R's of weight loss. So we listed six words that all start with R-E and how they pertain to getting back on track. And this really goes well with today's podcast that we're doing of, you know, just pressing play. You know, just start here and follow the guidance and you'll get there.
Right.
You know?
I think you're getting excited and moving away from your mic a little bit. So,
Oh, am I? That happens. I start talking with my hands.
It happens to me as well. So,
okay,
all right, so jump into them. Let's do them.
Sure.
Number one.
Okay.
Number one, R's of weight loss, what are they?
Number one is remove. Now, when I say remove, I'm talking about removing old habits and junk food out of your life. It may even be people in your life that need to be removed to get rid of some of the negative energy, some of the old bad habits, and of course, you know, getting the junk food out of the cupboards to set you down the path for getting in line and being attentive for what's about to happen.
Your kitchen, for example, is your laboratory. And you know, if you're building a healthy body, you're building a healthy lifestyle, you're building more years into your life, you got to clean out that laboratory. You can't make, you know, big things in a laboratory that's full of junky chemicals and such. So remove it. But also remember what you said, it's not just the food, it's the people.
Right.
You have, I guarantee you all have a Negative Nancy, or what's that skit from Saturday Night Live?
Negative Nancy or Negative Nelly or something
You all have that negative person in your life that drains you. And trust me, when they drain you of that energy, it impacts every other area of your life, including your ability to burn fat, lose weight, and get healthy.
Right. And keep in mind, it may be your workout partner. And if it is, it's time to change it up. Remove that and we will move to the next one, because the next re is restock. So restock your life, restock your cupboards, restock your the positive distractions in your life. And one of the things that I wanted to get to that I don't think we mentioned way back when we recorded this episode, when we said restock, we talked about restocking with whole unprocessed foods. But one of the things I've learned working with so many clients nutritionally is that making lateral shifts is what will get you there. So when you're restocking, think about replacing the foods that you removed and restocking with something that is a lateral shift that you still enjoy.
Yes. So if you normally ate a cranberry muffin in the morning, a lateral shift might be a little bit of steel-cut oats with a few
cranberries
in the oatmeal. Is that necessarily the ideal breakfast? For some people, it may be. For others, it may not. But it's certainly better than that cranberry muffin you were eating.
Absolutely. That's a great example. Or adding some cranberries to my protein pancakes.
Right. And, you know, restocking can also mean you're going out and finding a circle of trust of people that are positive. So once you get rid of all the negative people, start finding those people who add to your life and may help you achieve those goals. All right. So restock.
Okay. Next one is remodel. And you know, I listened to that podcast, and the first thing that popped in my head was, I know just about everybody I know has remodeled their house or remodeled their bathroom, or remodeled something that they live in. The one thing that we constantly live in that we don't move in and out of is our body. That's the one home that we have the entire time we are on this earth. So remodeling your life, remodeling your body, if you want to change the way your energy levels are, the way your body looks, the way you feel every day, your confidence levels, if you want to change something about you as an individual, you've got to remodel your life. And that includes, you know, the food, just the lifestyle. You have to remodel the way you live your life on a daily basis.
In other words, you got to set yourself up for success. And most people's lives are built in an inefficient manner. And so we want to build efficiency into the life as it pertains to fitness and health. So if you have a gym, if you're paying $5 less for a gym that's all the way across town when you could pay $5 more and get a membership to that gym that's on the way home from work, it's worth the extra $5. So remodel your lifestyle in such a way. Put some baggies of food of like nuts or something in your bag or in your briefcase so that when you're stuck in traffic, you have something you can chomp on. So by the time you get home, you're not starving.
Ravenous. Right, right. Good summary. Perfect. Okay. The next one is release. And that is releasing old beliefs. Maybe you feel like, you know, you've failed so many times at different attempts at weight loss that you just believe already that you cannot be successful. You have got to release those old beliefs.
And it doesn't happen naturally. You've got to consciously let go of that stuff. The end feeling when you actually successfully release is one of just, you know, I don't recall, but I probably used the pen example in the podcast episode where you're holding that pen, just, you know, pick up a pen and hold that pen, hold it. And as we're having this conversation, just hold that pen and don't think about it. It's like you forget the tension that's in your hand and you don't remember what that sensation of relaxation actually occurs until you let go of the pen. And that's what we're talking about. Release things, release all the times that you feel like you failed. You release all that. Just let it go. It's in the past. It's happened. You actually probably learned from it. So there were probably some advantages to it. Just let it go. Let go of the times people called you fat or people looked at you in a strange way. Just let it go. You know, all the people who did you wrong, all the, you know, times where life wasn't friendly to you. Just let it go.
Good. So release old beliefs. That was number four. Number five, recommit. So since you've released all your old beliefs and you're starting with a clean slate, it's time to recommit to a plan and know that this time it's going to work for sure. And after listening to today's podcast, anybody can do this. I hope that it instills everybody listening with that vote of confidence that you can do this and it will work.
It will work. It's awesome. Next, and the final
final one is re-educate. So replacing those old beliefs with new remodeled beliefs and ideas, knowing that they're going to work. So a new plan, something fresh, something new. And it doesn't have to be something you've never tried before, but it has to be a new approach.
It can't be the old way of doing it. That's the
point.
That's
right.
And I want to point out that re-educate doesn't come first in the list, which it oftentimes does in the people who – and a lot of you guys that are listening, we all oftentimes start with let's go find something new in a diet book somewhere or a magazine and then we'll get started. It comes at the end of the list because most of you already have enough packed away in your brain to start making great progress forward. And the re-education process comes back at the bottom of this list. After you've removed, after you've restocked, remodeled, released, and recommitted, then you start to re-educate yourself about things that may have failed you in the past and things that can serve you in the future. So you build upon what you already have. And when Blythe says, find something fresh, it's really about a fresh perspective, something that is different from what you've tried in the past, because what you've tried in the past hasn't worked. Now, it may have only failed you partially, and that partially was enough to cause that relapse, but we have to figure out, well, why did it fail in the past? If I was very successful with Weight Watchers, and then after, you know, a year and a half, I fell off, well, what was it? That's where the re-education occurs, right there in that one little spot of the total program. What was it that caused me to fall off?
Awesome.
All right?
Awesome. Man. I love the six re's.
That's a good one, Blythe. That was a good one. You know, I think I'm just going to let you pick the flashbacks.
The flashbacks.
Because you're good at that.
I have fun with those.
All right. Well, then that's today's podcast. Let's give people all the deets. Details.
Details. You guys can find us on Twitter. You can find us on Instagram. You can find us on Facebook. Like our page, Cut the Fat Podcast, all one word. We are going to be setting up another podcast very shortly for you guys. Again, we are going to get back on the bandwagon ourselves, right? I'm putting it out there. So we are going to adhere to it.
Right. Okay. And if you like the motivation moments and those kinds of failure is a verb, not a noun kind of sayings, just find us on Instagram. Cut the Fat Podcast is the Instagram
handle.
Thank you. And CTF Podcast for Twitter. And on Facebook, just search for Cut the Fat Podcast. It's hey, Blythe, it's no longer one word. It's they now allowed us to
you know what? There are spaces in between.
Yeah,
yes, and
yeah.
It does show up on mine.
I changed that. High five. Virtual high five
awesome.
On that.
Woo-hoo.
All right.
Hey, and I did want to mention that anybody who would like to leave a voice message for us on our website, www.cutthefatpodcast.com, we would love to have you as part of our next podcast. So feel free to leave a voice message and we will put you on.
It could be you can just tell us something about yourself. You can just say, you know, what was one great one tip that you picked up that was especially effective for you. It can be a question. So any of those things is great. Just go to cutthefatpodcast.com. It's in the lower right-hand corner. You do need a mic attached to your computer. And you can also do video voicemail as well if you want to be so brave and so bold. That would be cool. Also, iTunes, hop on there and give us a review. It'd be awesome.
Yes. Thank you so much for listening, guys. And I hope you have a fantastic, fit, and healthy day.
See ya.